A day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings. We hide our emotions by painting smiles upon our faces. It's what we do best. Everything is fine. It's just an ordinary dismissal.
Hi, I'm Amy Dunstan and I'm one of the assistant heads at Birchwood Special School in Melton Mowbray.
Hi, I'm Robbie Hesketh and I'm one of the teachers in the autism provision at Birchwood School in Melton Mowbray.
And I'm Rosalind Hopkins, head teacher. This is our third podcast where we're going to be looking at bubbles and wider school opening. Okay, so welcome back, everybody. It has been another really strange week where strange just got stranger. I officially live in part of Leicester that has been locked down because of a spike in cases. Obviously, as a key worker, I still continue to come in, but it certainly feels like there's just been another chapter within this whole thing. And it has been a very worrying time. And I want to just check in on how Robbie is, because we haven't seen you for a couple of weeks, have we, Robbie? Are you all right?
Yeah, all good.
Hey, Robbie.
Yeah, all right. I'm all safe. All happy.
You're all safe.
Yeah, happy in my bubble at home. So, yeah, that's fun.
We've all been there, yeah, Robbie.
It's tough.
I understand. So I probably should explain that Robbie's been in isolation for the last couple of weeks because we had to close down one of the bubbles at school and he'd had contact with the bubble that we had to close down, which is why he had to self-isolate. Probably should say that you were tested and you did test negative for the virus, which is really positive, but obviously you still need to stay at home because of that contact you'd had with somebody that was a confirmed case. Yeah. So I skipped right to the end of our story this week, because what happened to you, Robbie, is the net result of one of our safety measures that we introduced when we decided that it was going to be okay to open the school more widely to students. So we just go back a bit to around the end of May time, just prior to what would have been the May half term, when the government began to talk about this idea that schools would be able to open to key groups of students from June the 1st. And it was definitely the usual theme that we've had, where you hear a rumour, there's a hint of it in one of the announcements from the government, but we're literally just waiting on those broadcasts, aren't we? Those government broadcasts to find out exactly what's going to happen. And that is usually followed up with some government guidance explaining the detail behind the next step as we manage the pandemic. And so the government had set out 5 tests, and that if the country met those tests, then certain things would be able to open. And one of those things that would be able to open would be school to extra groups of students. Of course, initially, we didn't know what groups of students that would be. For mainstream schools, it was year 6 and reception in year 1. And obviously, that was really hotly debated as to why those particular groups. But for special schools, which is what we're focusing on, the rules were a bit different. Essentially, the wider opening would be based on the students' individualised risk assessments. So we'd have to look at every child individually and decide whether we felt it was safe for them to return. And then we'd also find out from the parents whether they felt that it was safe for their child to return back to school. So it was, again, we were just thrown into another situation where we really didn't know what it was going to look like, but we needed to work with our community, work with our families, work with our staff to see what we could pull together. Because the other half of this coin was that not only did we need to find out how the parents felt about sending their child back to school, but we also needed to find out whether we had enough staff that felt safe and comfortable coming into work. Bearing in mind that lots of staff have children and that in order for them to be able to come into work, their children needed to return to school in some capacity and their children might not be in the year groups that were being allowed to go back to school. Nurseries weren't all open. And in addition to that, there were still some staff that were shielding or fell into some of those high risk groups where they just did not feel that it was the right time for them personally to be returning. So we needed to get enough staff in for the demand that was indicated by the parents for their child to return. And then there was that whole thing that actually if a parent didn't feel that their child was safe to return, there wouldn't be any consequences in terms of attendance management, that was still very much the parent's choice as to whether or not they felt it was right. So we were launched into another round of surveys. So we surveyed the parents and we surveyed the staff and we had a look at the results and started to try and match those two things together. And once we had our numbers of the students that we could be expecting, we then had to have a look at the numbers of staff that we would be expecting in school. And as a special school, we were allowed to create a rota. Of course, that's where this term bubble was introduced, because once those groups were established, they would be the key groups of students and staff that would consistently work together, so that there wasn't a kind of mixing of larger numbers of people again within the school settings. This was where the idea of bubbles was introduced. And then, of course, the idea of zones, that the bubbles would then occupy certain zones of the school. And that led to massive whole site risk assessment to look at how we could make our school COVID safe. So bubbles, zones, risk assessments, consistent groupings, national measures, all of this became part of our regular dialogue as we built up towards the 1st of June. You guys were on the ground trying to make that happen in the real. But Amy, for you with the rotas, how did you interpret that time?
Oh, it was just probably my favourite job I've ever had. I absolutely loved putting that rota together. Yeah, it was really tricky, the rota itself. Putting it together made me recognise how many staff we've got that work across different areas and within different classes. So things like when it came to lunch times, that if I thought I had just about made a group workable and safe with the right ratio of staff. And of course, it was so important that those staff, due to the complexities of needs of our young people, that those staff needed to know and be aware of and be familiar with those students wherever possible. And just when you thought maybe the puzzle had fitted together and you had got enough to make a day work, then looking at, oh, actually, now we've got to, people are wearing full PPE and are going to need breaks and are going to need the opportunity to have time out of PPE, step away, have their lunch. But the idea of lunchtime supervisors that we'd had previously, obviously what we couldn't have was lunchtime supervisors working across bubbles. So we needed the whole bubble to ensure that it had got enough staff to run for the whole day.
I think it's really interesting what you're saying about we have so many staff that work across the school. Essentially what we were doing was completely reorganising our school.
Yeah.
To make it safe. And that meant changing the way people worked. But it also made us very aware that we couldn't eliminate risk.
No. It was really nerve-wracking that we were fully creating a new way of working. The whole setup of the school needed to look different in terms of marking up spaces. So lots of things were happening in the evening that then staff were coming into the next day. Staff were still watching. You know, we were having those morning, very spaced out meetings where those staff that it was their first day in were watching the doffing and donning video from the National Health Service. But I know I felt like what staff were looking for from SLT is for us to be confident and competent and able to deliver what the new normal was going to look like, how these zones were going to work, how lunchtimes were going to be managed, how the bubbles were going to be kept safe and secure. And there were so many questions and they were really looking to us to be confident in our answers of those questions. But at the same time, this was all so new to me as well. I remember really feeling that anxiety and pressure, for want of a better word, to get it right and to have answers, but to also acknowledge and accept the fact that there was certain things that we just didn't know yet and we were learning every day. And it, you know, there was a real collaborative approach that at the end of every day, trying to encourage staff to come and talk about the things, the problems that had arose, the issues, the difficulties, so that then again that night, you know, the young people were leaving at 3:30 and then the staff late night meetings with SLT trying to problem solve the thing that had happened the day before.
I think that looking at it from sort of like the ground floor, right at the start, obviously there wasn't as many students in. And as the process has gradually come on, getting more and more students, it's as teachers, we kind of look at it and go, we're not actually sure how you managed to put that rota together sometimes, because it was so complicated. Obviously, as time's gone on, you've kind of cracked in with your own bubble. It's been a learning process for us as well. But watching you kind of come together and make it work, because it has worked, but
it is a learning process, and it's one day at a time. It's something you couldn't really do 7 weeks ago to look at this week coming. You couldn't look at 7 weeks ago and go, oh, this is how it's going to look. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It had to be 1 week at a time. But then you kind of get used to it very, very quickly. And I think going back to the students, it's kind of like they had to get used to us all again. And what I was working with students that I've not worked with for a year. So it's been, yeah, another sort of learning experience and curves for me as a teacher.
One of the other things I was thinking about was we had to create this huge risk assessment for the whole site. So some of the things we were doing were marking out the 2 meters, introducing hand sanitizer stations on the entry to the school. And one of the things that really struck me was that for a lot of our young people who were going to be coming back for the first time, one of the things that we were considering on their individualized risk assessments was how will they cope with coming back into this safe environment where they had great relationships with staff, but it actually wasn't going to be what they expected because it was going to be quite different. And how were we going to help them adjust to that difference? And what if they arrived and they reacted really badly to this idea that they could only go into certain locations? Even the very first thing that happens to them as they approach school is going to be significantly different. So the approach to school is going to be different. The staff that are going to be working with them are going to be quite different. So some of those people, the familiar faces, the adults that have built that rapport and the relationship and understand how they work weren't going to be there. People would be wearing PPE. So it was the first time, again, a whole other group of young people would have to get used to staff looking different. And then once in school, where they have lunch is going to be different, where they play might be different, how they're able to interact with peers is going to be different. All of those things added to that sleepless night before that first day back. But what were your thoughts around how the young people were going to react to all these changes? Bearing in mind, we have such a large portion of young people with autism who that routine is so important.
I think looking at it, when we look at how, obviously, we had to change in what you've just listed off there, Roz, it's a massive, massive change for every single person. And for our students, it was something that was going to be always really tricky and really difficult. But when you look at it in the idea that at virtual school, I think we've continued to have high expectations. And these high expectations of our students has allowed us to put all these things in place and allow these kids to come in and be absolutely fine with what's going on. There's always going to be some behaviour that comes out of it. But a lot of it has been positive and a lot of it has been okay and fine and they've dealt with it and they've been resilient. But I think because we have this philosophy at Birchwood to have those high expectations of the kids has allowed them to flourish when they come into school, regardless of COVID-19 or not.
So, Amy, you were really good at when you did the rota about trying to always put somebody there that young person had some relationship with, and that probably helped, didn't it?
I think I was in a good position to be able to put that rota together in terms of having a whole Grange Drive overview site of the students and the staff. So not only carefully looking at who I was going to put on a certain rota that there was a key familiar member of staff around, but also considering the dynamics of the young people. So which students you would have in on certain days together and thinking about their relationships and trying to put together young people that you knew were going to really flourish with their peers, with someone that they've got a lovely relationship with. One of the things when you talked, Roz, about entering the school building from a different area, because we had different classes entering in a different zone. We've got four separate areas, the doors that the young people are coming in through. And there's several young people that do struggle to get to their class in the morning, that have routines that might involve walking around the school for some time just to orientate themselves and prepare for the start of the day. But what we did, which I think was really effective, is for that group of students, their entrance was allowing them to almost enter straight into a safe outdoor space, which meant so that they were coming in and they had got the space outside, which is great in terms of virus, but also meant that they could enjoy it. Was into a play area where they've got lots of things that are really motivating and interesting. So that initial arrive, possible anxiety and even panic about, well, I'm going through a different door. But actually what that door very quickly led to was an outdoor space that was really familiar and really enjoyable. And I think that was really effective strategy. So in terms of social interaction, I did during that time an interesting, albeit frightening, account from a mainstream school that was talking about applying actual sanctions on young people that had broken the rules, one strike, and you were sent out into isolation on your own. And there was a real sort of punishment element in order to teach children. And for us, I know it was really difficult because we don't want to teach children that social interaction isn't positive, that being and playing and sharing with your friends, you know, these are skills and attributes that we've worked so hard to encourage in our kids. And suddenly we've needed to work in a different way. And I think that's been a real challenge for us to overcome, that some of the things ordinarily we'd be trying to flood them with, we were carefully and with care trying to detract from during this time.
And of course, all of this was happening against the backdrop of our own doubts, or certainly my own doubts as to, is this safe? Should we be doing this? Have we done it right? Because there was still a lot of people that felt that schools shouldn't be opening more widely. The unions, quite rightly, were questioning whether it was safe for their members to return to work. There were lots of questions about the year groups that had been asked to return. And of course, again, very little mention of special schools and the definite difference that it meant for special schools having more young people in.
The guidance was labelled as unworkable, confusing and contradictory. And for school leaders managing that, it was, but, you know, still now today, I think I know that I personally am very much questioning and having to relook at and ensure, you know, have we done the right thing? The recent thing you've talked about, the local lockdown in Leicester. And I've certainly, from some of the things that I've read and heard, felt like there's been real pressure applied and success measured by the numbers attending school.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's quite
unhealthy.
Unhealthy, yeah.
Yeah, to use the word with the multiple meanings, it is really unhealthy to measure it in that way. And I've certainly felt as a head teacher that not having good school attendance relative to other similar schools would be frowned upon. And yet at the same time, and this is the problem with the thing that we've been doing all the way through this, is this weighing everything up all the while. So at the same time, you have to recognise there isn't going to be a zero risk scenario, that we have to take some risks. That's hard because you're taking risks with other people's children. Amy said in one of the other podcasts that these are the most precious things to other people and we're responsible for them. And we're having to determine what risks are okay, but because there's no way you could reduce it down to zero risk. So there has to be some positive risk taking. And you have to also take into account that by June the 1st, there were some children and families that had been at home socially isolating since the 20th of March. So lots and lots of families at this time were reaching a real crisis point.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the one hand of saying the evidence is confusing and not really that compelling that it is safe enough to open more widely now, but that was heavily weighted against the situation at home for some families. There were certainly increases in that sort of crisis behaviour, with some families saying that their children were returning to behaviours that they hadn't seen in years, including particularly for young people with communication difficulties who are even nonverbal or have limited speech, that they were trying to express their feelings to their families and having those conversations with the families, with the teachers that were working closely with the families through that regular contact. And in some cases, the social workers, I found that really, really troubling and really difficult. A couple of families told me that their children were indicating that they couldn't understand why they couldn't go to school because they were requesting to wear different parts of their school uniform. That was really heartbreaking. Self-harm behaviours, reclusive behaviours, all things that in that risk assessment, you're thinking, yeah, if they come to school, they've got much more chance of being exposed to the virus. And for some of those young people, they do have some medical complications. But that versus the mental health and well-being issues for that young person, but also for the family who are watching that unfold. It was trying to weigh those things up that pushed us into really trying to make the school as safe as possible if they did come.
Yeah, I think.
And being rigid about that.
Those initial sort of risk assessments that we had to make as teachers for our class, they were so, I think that probably is one of the most difficult things I've ever written. It took such a long time, but to go through every aspect of behaviour and what school could look like, and then to come out with the conclusion that potentially this isn't the right place for them right now, that they're safer at home. Mm. And to tell parents that, and even though with the fact that we've gone through this whole situation with a really sort of open and honest relationship with parents, if we didn't have that, I think that would have been such a tricky conversation to have. I mean, we have to have them anyway, but the way that things have gone, parents have been phenomenal in supporting us through this difficult time and these difficult decisions that we're having to make. And like I say, those risk assessments to go through it and then highlight that at this point, I mean, I can't remember how long we did them. Was it about 10 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago we did them? Mm-hmm. Quite a while ago. And to go through each student, you're basically saying that at this point, the safest place is home. It goes against everything that you've put in place for. And we've had students that have started this year and they've been out of school for a year or 2 years. And then suddenly you're saying school might not be the right place for you. And it's heartbreaking sometimes to hear what the behaviours, like say going back. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one.
I think what's really interesting, Robbie, or shows again how well our teachers know our students, is that when those risk assessments did come in, and obviously they were tied up and married up with the information that we'd had back from parents,
yeah,
that actually for those young people that teachers were identifying through risk assessments and through their thorough and ongoing communication with families, the students that the teachers had identified on the whole matched up with the families that were saying, yeah, we really need time in school. And what we were able then to do, because we were able to use a rota system, is I think I'm right in saying, Ros, that every family that did request some time, some in-school time, we were able to offer it to, because we'd had those really robust, open and honest conversations with parents. And then what we'd done is really robust risk assessing, which had been shared with parents. And then we came up with a common understanding of, right, okay, through that collaborative work, there was a lot of agreement, and it did show how well our teachers here know and understand the needs of the students and the dynamics of the family environment.
School is just so much more than school, but in all cases, but in a special school case, schools are providing way more than an education. They're providing way more than just a childcare service, which it certainly at times it felt like that was one of our main roles. Schools were at that source of support and comfort for parents. They were a centre where young people could feel safe and supported. You're actually fulfilling so many social roles in a school environment. And those risk assessments, I think, will stand the test of time in showing just how important a school environment is to young people. Home learning can fulfil a certain function and can be really positive. And certainly using IT can have immense benefits, but nothing is going to replace those relationships that happen within a school environment. And nothing is going to replace that opportunity to interact with other people from different backgrounds as part of your development as a human being, and that function in society of just keeping young people safe and supporting families is something that I don't think should ever be downplayed again, because some of the reasons why children were returning to school during the pandemic were for those reasons. It wasn't for their maths and English and their science. It was for so many other things that make us healthy and well mentally.
We're a support network as well, that not just for the students, but for parents too.
Definitely. And so the kind of really brilliant thing, we can ignore the constant dark fear that I think we all carry around inside of us at the moment about whether things are safe or not. If we're able to silence those voices just for a little minute and allow ourselves a little bit of happiness, what was amazing was to see all the little reunions when the doors did open that first week to those young people, and to see them, to see that some of them had grown a little bit. to see how happy staff were to be reintroduced. That kind of made all the hard work that everybody was putting in to making the site safe, to the massive amounts of work that was being put into those rotors and the staffing and all those telephone conversations with staff about how they felt about coming into work. What made a lot of that feel absolutely worth it was seeing the some of those young people for the first time since March, really just seeing the reactions of staff towards them and their reactions towards staff when they came back through the doors.
Yeah, there's been some amazing sort of moments, hasn't there, throughout this. Seen the worst of people, but it's seen some amazing sort of relationships flourish.
There was a student that saw one of the members of staff, I think it was a particularly hot day, and just kind of looked him up and down in his PPE and said, you're going to be hot today. And it's just that those little bits of banter and the humour that they bring into our lives. And of course, because a lot of the work that we've been doing is when the buildings and the classrooms are empty, and it shows us that really a school without the students is just not a school, is it? It's something else. It's just another building.
Shell. Yeah, it's just soulless building.
It is.
We're nothing. We're nothing without them.
I did have one of the young people on his first day back, because we'd sent out lots of pictures and social stories, including staff in PPE and videos. And I talked about that last week. One young person come in and looked me up and down and say, "Oh, Amy, you do look smart." So I don't know. I don't know what
I got one of the opposite.
How I normally look, but
I got a student telling me that I looked ridiculous. So thank you
we
for that.
We kind of do.
Yeah.
They've had a good laugh at our expense, some of those young people, haven't they? And that's okay. That is really okay. So in our next podcast, we'll be having a look at what happened when we had a confirmed case of coronavirus in school and how those zones and bubbles came into effect. We'll also be discussing how we supported staff to return to work after they'd been socially distancing at home. In some of our future podcasts, we're also really looking forward to looking more closely at our secondary school, Birchwood Vale. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Thank you.